welcome to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a global audience, produced at a different location every week. I'm Lisa Loving of the Pacifica Radio Network, and this is Election Coverage 2024.
I want to warn the country of some things that give me great concern. And that's the dangerous concentration of power in the hands of a very few ultra-wealthy people. The dangerous consequences if their abuse of power is left unchecked.
This is our final episode. The show started with a series of journalism trainings for Pacifica Radio-affiliated newsrooms. And by the way, those trainings are free online for anyone to watch in video podcast format at pacifica.org. The trainings grew into this newscast, showcasing Pacifica Network newsrooms and reporters across the country. Now, on this last episode, we're pulling out our crystal ball to look ahead at the future of media in a rapidly shifting society. We start with a few words from outgoing President Joe Biden. Then we'll hear from Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting founder Jeff Cohen on what's next. Then we speak with Jennifer Beach at the Prison Radio Project about a new wave of laws criminalizing peaceful protests from coast to coast. Then Brian Beal of the American Democracy Minute reports on how North Dakota Native American communities won a big victory in court against a redistricting proposal that would have weakened their voting power. But first, in his last few words as President of the United States, Joe Biden issued an unusual warning.
You know, his farewell address, President Eisenhower spoke of the dangers of a military-industrial complex. He warned us then about, and I quote, the potential for the disastrous rise, misplaced power, end of quote. Six decades later, I'm equally concerned about the potential rise of a tech-industrial complex that could pose real dangers for our country as well. Americans are being buried under an avalanche of misinformation and disinformation, enabling the abuse of power. The free press is crumbling. Editors are disappearing. Social media is giving up on fact-checking. The truth is smothered by lies, told for power and for profit. We must hold the social platform accountable and protect our children and our families in our very democracy.
That was outgoing President Joe Biden giving his farewell speech to the nation. There are few sharper media critics than Jeff Cohen. He's the founder of the media watchdog group Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. He was an endowed chair and founding director of the Park Center for Independent Media at Ithaca College in New York. He's a co-founder of RootsAction.org with his longtime collaborator Norman Solomon, with whom he's written several books of media criticism. He gave us an overview of what the future might hold for media and society. Jeff, why are media outlets afraid of Trump, and do you think these fears are legitimate?
I think the fears are legitimate, but remember that these corporations that dominate our media system and the billionaires that dominate our system care more about profits than they do about news or journalism. That's the beginning point. This is a guy who's threatened Comcast because Seth Meyers was making jokes about him on NBC. And with the Federal Communications Commission, the president does have power to threaten or revoke broadcast licenses, and Trump said he would do them. And he's just announced that he's elevating a complete right-wing nut who he'd appointed to the Federal Communications Commission, named Brendan Carr. He will be the FCC chair. And it's not just that he threatens lawsuits. He actually files lawsuits against the media. And the most famous was the one against ABC Disney, where George Stephanopoulos had been slightly inaccurate. Trump files a defamation suit. Almost every legal expert in the country said ABC Disney didn't have a chance of losing that suit. But right before Trump gets into power, Disney settles the suit. And the settlement, they're giving $15 million to Trump's future presidential museum and foundation, and then paying $1 million Disney did in Trump's legal fees. He's also actually started a lawsuit against the Des Moines Register for a poll. So, yeah, this guy, he's always, I'm from New York, you know, his whole career was created by news media boosting his celebrity, protecting him. He was always a con artist, always an illegitimate guy who was crossing legal boundaries in his real estate businesses. But this, the media, which in our country worships wealth and power and celebrity, built this guy up. And now he's getting his way, I think, more, as you pointed out, through threats, through lawsuits. You've got about faces like Morning Joe. Up until the election, Trump was a fascist. And then they go down to Mar-a-Lago. And I mean, I think we have to understand that the main flaw in the media system, if you believe in democracy, which is founded on the idea that you have an informed electorate. It's hard to have an informed electorate when the media are increasingly in the hands of fewer and fewer giant corporations and billionaires. So, you know, you're seeing suppression of editorials. At the LA Times, the editorial board was ready to endorse Harris over Trump, and the owner blocked it. At the Washington Post, the same thing happened, where the owner is Jeff Bezos, who also owns Amazon. And you're getting to the point where censorship, because of the corporate ownership, censorship of mainstream journalism is going to, in behalf of Trump, is going to become more severe. And the most recent case is the suppression of this cartoon by the Washington Post, where it was it's one of my favorite recent cartoons. It's on my wall. You've got these billionaires at the feet of a Donald Trump statue holding out money bags. It includes Jeff Bezos, who owns the Washington Post. That's the reason the cartoon never appeared in print. You've got Zuckerberg, the owner of Meta, which is Facebook and Instagram. They're all holding out money bags at the feet of Trump on their knees. And then you have Mickey Mouse representing Disney for their giving him millions and millions of dollars in a suit that they would have won. And you have Mickey Mouse is basically on his belly, flat on his belly. So, and the trips to Mar-a-Lago, you know, we have the 10 richest billionaires. Most of them have taken trips to Mar-a-Lago in the last few weeks since the election. And these are media companies and social media companies. Zuckerberg has gone to Mar-a-Lago, Bezos. They're all going to be on the dais. It's not just, you know, at the inauguration, it's not just Musk, who owns Twitter, but Zuckerberg, Bezos, and the others will be up there on the day. So you have a real merger of Trump and the people that own and control media and social media.
And not just those billionaires, but also the billionaire owner of TikTok. Jeff, as a society, have we been here before?
I'm not sure we've ever been here before. I'm a student of media history. It's never been worse in terms of mainstream media. We've had press lords in the past, Hearst, Pulitzer, but never so much media in every city and nationally controlled by so few companies. And, you know, as social media, no industry has monopolized as fast as the internet. The billionaires that dominated railroads or U.S. Steel or auto, you know, it took decades for that to happen, sometimes generations for that monopolization. But the internet, because of corporate corruption and control over the government, the internet has been placed in the hands of a few billionaires. The internet, which could have liberated democracy, could have liberated media and communication, is now an enemy of democracy in the hands of these billionaires. So no, I believe if you're analyzing the media system, it's never been this dire.
big, big, big picture, what do you think is going to happen now, and perhaps also what could happen now?
I believe that your listeners need to turn off corporate media. It can't be trusted. There's this myth about the New York Times or NPR or Washington Post or MSNBC that, you know, they're the counterweight to the right wing and the Trump. But given what we call a megamorphosis of the owners, where they're currying favor with Trump, you just can't rely on them. I'm so tired of hearing MSNBC held up as the left-wing alternative to the right-wing Fox News. It's never been that. When Biden had made a very excellent appointment of a consumer advocate to be on the Federal Communications Commission, why did she never get on the FCC? Because two corporations, lobbyists, prevented it from happening. It was the lobbyists from Fox and the lobbyists from Comcast that owns MSNBC. So my advice to your listeners is to turn off corporate media, look at it only to see what the masses are being fed, and turn on and support independent media. That's the good news. That's what I studied for 10 years at Ithaca College at the Park Center for Independent Media. You know, the internet has been a double-edged sword. It has allowed the right wing to dispense disinformation, conspiracy theories, hate, divisiveness. But the right wing always had power in the mainstream media, so that wasn't new. But what the internet did, it allowed journalistically based, fact-based, independent outlets to boom. And if you take the audiences combined of, say, Democracy Now! And the web TV show, The Young Turks, and all of these websites that obviously didn't exist before the internet, before there were websites, Salon and Truth Out and Truth Dig and Common Dreams and Counterpunch. And you add that all up, millions of people every day on Pacifica-friendly stations, on the web, millions of people for the first time in U.S. history have access every single day to independent, non-conglomerate news. That wasn't the case. As you study media history, there were two times where there was a big press that countered corporate news. One was before World War I, where there were powerful socialist newspapers, national and in every city. And the other time was in the 60s and 70s, 1960s and 1970s, with the growth of alternative weeklies. You know, you had the Village Voice in New York and the Berkeley Barb and the LA Free Press. But those were weeklies. Today, because of the internet, if enough people learn about it, if those of us who are already tuned into independent media will use our email power, our word of mouth, our social media to tell people about KBOO and Pacifica and Amy Goodman and the Young Turks and CommonDreams.org and TruthOut.org, we could build this independent media. The problem for independent media, as solid as they are journalistically, and by the way, some of the media, some of those alternative weeklies in the 60s and 70s were longer on four-letter words and rhetoric than they were hard news. But, you know, we have today really good independent news outlets that focus on news and delivering it accurately and fairly. And those of us who are already tuned into independent media need to tell our neighbors about it, because obviously independent news outlets, Democracy Now! Doesn't have an advertising budget. So it's up to us that are already clued into independent news to spread the word about independent news outlets.
Is there anything else about this topic that you think that people should know or that you really feel moved to say?
I guess as a journalism professor, and before that I was, as you mentioned, a media critic at FAIR, and I spent time in mainstream television news. I was on the air on CNN, Fox News, MSNBC. I witnessed censorship up close. I saw what corporate censorship happened, how it happens. And it's often self-censorship. It doesn't have to be Jeff Bezos at the Washington Post telling them not to write this, not to publish this cartoon that has him on his knees handing a bag of money to at Donald Trump's feet, because the editor, the opinion editor, did the censorship on his own. So what I, and this is what people don't know, most of the censorship in U.S. society, it may change if Trump gets more and more blatant in his threats and his lawsuits and his denying of his threat to take away broadcast licenses. But generally in the corporate media, censorship happens because people are self-censored. You learn in the mainstream media what stories to avoid. Like Cable, Democracy Now, or KPFK, KPFA, Pacifica. You can cover what's actually happening in Gaza. You do that in the mainstream media, you lose your job. I mean, more people, more mainstream journalists have lost their jobs over accurate coverage of Israel because that wasn't what was wanted. And so people in mainstream media learn how to self-censor themselves, and the executives sure know how to engage in censorship before the owners have to step in. So I think that's the one thing I'd want to communicate, besides people supporting and spreading the word about independent news outlets, is that you can't trust corporate mainstream media, because even though there are some very good journalists in there, there's this phenomenon of self-censorship. And in my view, it's gotten worse every decade, not better.
That was Jeff Cohen. He's the founder of Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting and the policy director at rootsaction.org. You're listening to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, a weekly program bringing you local radio productions of global interest. I'm Lisa Loving from the Pacifica Radio Network with Election Coverage 2024. For 30 years, the Prison Radio Project has recorded and broadcast commentaries by people living inside of prisons. Their founding correspondent is Mumia Abu-Jamal, but they now have over 50 active commentators. I spoke with Jennifer Beach about their work, the increasing criminalization of protest, and their recent focus on a series of self-immolations at the Red Onion Supermax prison in Virginia.
Can you talk a little bit about the new laws that are criminalizing peaceful protest now that Donald Trump is taking office?
You know, I think that one of the things about the new administration is that it's going to be filled with chaos and fear mongering. And there are many terrible things that this administration wants to do. It is more critical than ever in this moment, as we kind of step into the abyss, to remember, to keep in mind that people always resist, that we will find a way through this, that we will remain, that all of us justice-loving people will not disappear under a rock. We will find ways to come forward. There is likely to be a new wave of political prisoners, and I think this is a great opportunity. If you're not already familiar with the tradition of capturing and holding political prisoners, to become familiar with it, we have a great reader that we just published, that we just produced with City Lights, called Beneath the Mountain, that can give you a great historical perspective of the use of incarceration as a tool of repression and the resistance that imagines for us. So I think, you know, I think it's very important for people to find communities in which they can do their work. I think this is a time for you to determine what your work is, and to do it, and to do it in community and in collaboration, and to know that you are going to face obstacles that are historically anomalous, but they're not going to be everything you predict. They're going to be unpredictable. And so I think it's really critical to stay agile and to remain in community. And I think that's one of the really powerful parts of the prison radio's work, is that we share the embedded resistance, the relentless resistance of people who are locked down under the most restrictive conditions that have been developed by the advanced state. And those people are people we should be listening to for examples and for ideas of how to continue our resistance. because they have, and they've been doing it for decades. So Mumia has been in prison, incarcerated for 40 years. He continues to be a light, an intellectual leader of the left, and to do that from behind bars. We are the people who have broadcast his work. Almost all of the audio you will find of Mumia's work since his incarceration has happened because of our production. And that, we feel like that is a tremendous gift to the movement. And we hope people go to our website at prisonradio.org and listen to his work and listen to the work of his comrades behind bars. The Red Onion story would have never broken without us, right? Rashid Johnson knew to call us. No one else would have taken his call, recorded it, and published it. He knew that. He knew that we would do that. And because he trusted us with that story. And then it got into Al Jazeera. It got into New York Times. It got into The Guardian. Because he understood that we are committed to this work of broadcasting these truths. And so that, I think, is something, that kind of dedication is something that we're all going to have to bring to our work in this period.
What is going on at Red Onion?
Well, at Red Onion, I mean, all Supermaxes, if you can just imagine from the name what a Supermax is, right? So you take a prison and you make it much worse. And you create conditions of tremendous isolation and of utter control, right? They are control units. Germany developed this technology and the U.S. really took it to a whole other level, right? So the first control units were developed in the 60s, 70s in Germany. And then the U.S. took that technology and enhanced it. So what you have in Red Onion is you have a completely rural environment where most of the inmates are African American. Most of the guards are white. The racism is endemic and violent and explicit in people's everyday experiences. And when people set fire to themselves, it was not, their intention was not to create a prison uprising. Their intention was desperately to try to get out of those prisons. Because of the religious repression and the racist repression and the violence and the intimidation and the isolation, the conditions overall at Red Onion are unlivable. So unlivable that people would rather burn themselves so that they have to go to a special burn unit across the state just to get out. So the supermaxes are always in super isolated situations. So reporters can't go there. So people can't see it. So the calls we get from Supermaxes are calls no one else is getting, right? You call us and you tell us what's going on in your prison, right? And that's what we broadcast. So we have women calling from Huron Valley in Michigan that aren't getting aired anywhere else. We have people calling from the psychiatric facilities in DC. No one else is taking those calls. No one else is airing those stories, right? So that is something you can only get from prison radio. And I want to say this about this period that we're moving into, that we are going to have to reconstruct a movement for social change, and that is going to require an abolitionist mindset in which we understand that every resource that is used to create a prison is stolen from our communities that desperately need those resources for healthcare, for childcare, for education, for jobs programs, right? And that abolitionist thinking, those resources need to be redirected into our communities. And we cannot build an abolitionist movement without listening to the leadership, without listening to the priorities of the most impacted communities. We don't know if the next round of political prisoners is going to more come from the indigenous organizing or more come from the environmental organizing or more come from police misconduct organizing, right? There's a wide, many, many different sectors of resistance, and though people are going to be picked out of any of them. And if you go to jail for your activism, call us, all right? Because we will record you, all right? And we will broadcast your work, and we will bring your voice outside the prison walls.
That was myself speaking with Jennifer Beach of the Prison Radio Project. Their new book of writings by incarcerated people is called Beneath the Mountain. And finally, Indigenous voters in North Dakota posted a major redistricting victory in court. The American Democracy Minute reports.
I'm Brian Beal, host and producer of the American Democracy Minute, a daily news report on democracy issues from WNHN in Concord, New Hampshire. Americans often think of the South and black voters when they hear the term voter suppression. But for legislatures in some Western states, it's Native American voters whose voting power often gets diluted. As you'll hear in our January 17th report, the MHA Nation fought back and won, but the partisan powers aiming to suppress minority voters are bringing their arguments to a sympathetic Supreme Court. Native American voters prevailed in federal court against the state of North Dakota, protecting the ability to elect the candidate of their choice. January 13th, the U.S. Supreme Court refused to hear a redistricting case we covered in May 2024, affirming a North Dakota federal appeals court decision. The appeals court had dismissed a state house district challenge by two non-Native residents who claimed their rights were infringed. The case dates back to 2021 when the Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara Nations, also known as the MHA Nation, negotiated with the state to protect Native voting power under the 1965 Voting Rights Act, Section 2. After an agreement, state GOP officials later shamefully reversed positions in 2022, embracing a new GOP tactic which argues such majority-minority districts are a violation of the Equal Protection Clause under the U.S. Constitution. The same argument has been made in Robinson versus Calais over Louisiana's now two majority-minority districts. The MHA Nation decision protects North Dakota State House District 4A and three other districts. Great news for Native voters. But the Louisiana case is expected to be heard in the High Court in early 2025, and the conservative justices seem to have made it their mission to dismantle the VRA. You can hear the American Democracy Minute radio report daily on many Pacifica stations or on AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. Reporting for Sprouts and the Pacifica Radio Network, I'm Brian Beal.
That's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to Election Coverage 2024. Our contributors throughout this series have included WORT in Madison, Wisconsin, WSLR in Sarasota, Florida, WBAI in New York City, KHOI in Ames, Iowa, KKFI in Kansas City, Missouri, WZRD at Northeastern Illinois University, WOJB in Hayward, Wisconsin, KEPW in Eugene, Oregon, Hudson Mohawk Magazine in Troy, New York, The Bradcast out of KPFK in Los Angeles, California, WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina, KUGS-FM in Bellingham, Washington, KPFT in Houston, Texas, Capitalism, Race, and Democracy, KBOO in Portland, Oregon, and WNHN-FMLP in Concord, New Hampshire. Production editor has been Isabel Charlet. Assistance came from Stephanie Schubert. The Sprouts theme music is Torpedoes on Tuesday by Poison Control Center. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the globe. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to showcase globally on Sprouts, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. I'm Lisa Loving from the Pacifica Radio Network. Thank you for listening.